What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have father, trainer, coach, Harvard Westlake, Mr. Joe Dawkins, man. Welcome to the show, man.
Appreciate you, dog.
No, 100%. You are the quickest recommendation that we've ever had on this show.
Really?
KJ Smith was on here last week. And he was like, man, you got to get my cousin on here. Actually, he did not just say your name here, but as soon as he left, he's like, you got to get my cousin Joe on here.
That's dope.
Hit you up immediately, man. You came through immediately. Great to have you on the show,
brother. Happy to be here, man. I can't complain.
Absolutely. We like to start this show off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
Yeah, you got some good movies in here, bro. I can't lie. But if I had to choose, I'm going to have to go with He Got Game.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a classic. Denzel, Ray Allen. I mean, Jesus Shuttlesworth, my favorite character. I was going to ask you, like, who's winning, Jesus Shuttlesworth or another guy from the movie Above the Rim, Shep? Shep, who's winning, Jesus or Shep?
Oh, Jesus or Shep? I mean, I have to give
and
it to Jesus.
And they prime.
I have to give it to Jesus Shuttlesworth. Remember, because Shep's prime was high school because he stopped hooping because Nutso.
Because Nutso, right.
Right. I think Jesus Shuttlesworth probably went on to Big State. Went on to the NBA and got some championships with the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, maybe in high school I think it would have been a good game, but I'm still giving it to.
Are you giving it to Jesus or to anybody
in
the basketball history of movies,
man,
characters?
The only other person who I would have to say is. What's Penny's character's name from Blue Chips?
From Blue Chips. I know exactly who you're
yes.
talking about.
Penny from Blue Chips.
Mitch, was it Mitch?
Mitch.
Mitch was tough.
He was tough, man. So them three in a one-on-one. Man, that would have been a dope game. Or LeBron in more than a game, but we ain't going to count that. But yeah.
Right. That's real. We talk about fictional characters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So, man, we love to just hop into your journey, man. When did you fall in love with basketball?
Man, I was probably like 4 or 5, watching my uncle play for the Rockets, Kenny Smith. I just fell in love with it, just everything about the game, I just fell in love with. And it was easy to pick up because you could just grab a basketball, go outside and dribble, practice the moves you see. So I fell in love with it early.
Yeah, you're out here in L.A. now, man. Where did you grow up? I can hear it in your accent, man. You ain't from around these parts.
I'm not an L.A. dude, man. But I'm from Connecticut originally. I was born and raised there. Then I moved to Jersey when I was like a senior in high school.
Got you. So you fell in love at an early age. You had, the joy of a family member, your uncle, playing in the NBA. So being able to connect with it that way as well. Mm-hmm. What really took you from, dribbling around to taking the game seriously throughout your childhood?
I just think I was different from the guys in my neighborhood. Like, we would play at the park all day, but then after they would go home, I would still be at the park. So I knew, I was like, I take it a little more serious. And then when I got to high school, the coach, Ken Smith, he was the coach of the number one school in the state at the time. And he was like, why don't you come out, just play with the team, da 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 da. And when I played, he was just like, no, you going to play with us. You're going to be, like, you ain't going nowhere. So then I knew, I was like, that's the best school in Connecticut. Like, why? Like, and if he likes me, then I'm pretty decent.
Dope. And then before getting to high school, so you obviously had to work on your game and get good. You know, what were the attributes that made you different, and how did you work on that skill set leading up to high school?
I think it was just passion. Like, when you love it, no one has to wake you up. No one has to call you or be like, come train with me. You waking your parents up. You're the guy like, mom, take me here. I want to train here. I want to train with this person. So, like, wasn't necessarily training, but I wanted to play against everybody. I wanted to play where all the good kids play. And I just loved it. That's what made me different.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about this before the show. It's like the difference in the development from now, from when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And it was more playing. Right. Mm-hmm. And using our imagination, those types of things. Like, were you, emulating your game after your uncle, or did you have other players that you were, stealing moves from?
They used to have this NBA Jam, like, cassette. It was like a tape. This is called, like, NBA Jam. You plug it in, it's like highlights from everyone around the league. And, like, I would literally watch that, like, every day. So it wasn't just my uncle. Like, my uncle was in certain clips of it, but it would be Nick Van Exel, Sam Cassell. It would be all the, like, guards that Derek Harper. Like, I took stuff from everybody. Like, and me, I was a little different. Like, I was so obsessed with it. Like, I could literally watch a play, like, 30 times in a row. Like, I'm like, oh, he's on a fast break. It's a 3-on-2. This is what he did. Like, and I'd rewind it and put myself in a scenario. So
it's the makings of a coach, man. When you're a kid and you watching film that much, like, you're probably going to be a coach when you
grow. I loved it. I didn't even know that's what I was doing. I was conditioning myself to be a coach. That's crazy.
That's dope. And then, so did you play AAU at all before you got to high school?
I did. AAU wasn't as big as it is now. It wasn't like a EYBL circuit or anything, but I played for like a couple teams, like CT Select or like North Stars. They're all Connecticut teams.
Yeah. Gotcha. Were you playing locally or did you get to travel?
We got to travel. We didn't travel as much. Like, I remember like AAU Nationals would be in like Florida.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like Orlando. We would travel there. We'd travel to like the Jersey, Philly and play. But the most traveling I did was probably like the invitational camps, like Eastern Invitational or like camps like that. Yeah.
Got you. And then, so you said you met this coach, and that's where, you know, you kind of knew that it was going to get serious because he was the coach at the best school.
Yeah.
And it was serious there.
Yeah.
And so, how did that next chapter in your life unfold going into high school?
It was dope. I got to play for, like I said, Kinster. He's a legend out there. He's won probably over 10 state titles. Oh, yeah, and at the time I didn't really notice how good I had it because he was so crazy at the time. But then I realized, like, you know, after leaving, like, I needed that. Yeah. So
what was crazy? Explain.
Like
that.
He made us play full court defense the whole game. Like tryouts, the first 3 days is no basketball. It's just all running and slides and stuff like that. So he weeded out all the bad seeds quick. Like, if you just thought you were good and you wouldn't take basketball serious, he got you out of there just out in tryouts. Wow. So, like, back then I thought, like, that's crazy. Or, like, he's yelling at kids, like, throwing kids in the game from the bench. But I'm like, yo, this is wild. But then I realized, like, he was just making us, like, into, like dogs.
Yeah.
He was, like, turning that dog up in us. So I appreciate it now.
So now you say you appreciate it now. So what was your response then? And how would you tell somebody who's dealing with that now, right? We got some crazy coaches out there still.
Yeah.
How would you tell a kid to manage that coach?
I mean, it's hard for a kid to kind of think outside of what's going on immediately. But you just got to, like I said, if you guys are winning and he has a winning program, there's a reason why, right? So, once someone has won enough, like you have to understand, like, it's them that's doing the right thing and it's me that's wrong. Like, I have to conform. Like, my thing was I always want to win. So if you're a winner, no matter how you're going about it, you're doing it the right way. Now, there is some people that go overboard. Like, there's a clear line between overboard. But to me, it was like, we're winning. Like, I'm part of it. Like, when we walk in with our Windsor jackets, everybody know, like, oh, he plays at Windsor. Like, they're them guys. Okay. It's just like us. Like Harvard Westlake.
Yeah.
We're winning. So how can you come in there and say, nah, coach, you tripping.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't have to run this much.
Yeah.
No, you're tripping. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So that's what kind of helped me.
No, I think it's important for parents to understand and just in our generation and culture where these kids are dealing, how do I want to say this? They're dealing with and they're more aware of their mental state. Right, we didn't have that much attention paid to our mental state. It was like, yo, figure that out our parents and the people around us. I think these kids are way more aware of their mental state and when they're feeling some type of anxiety or stress or discomfort. And parents want to come in and save them because of whatever reason. And so their response to that is to come in and either snatch them out of the program or talk to the coach. Or do something and not let them go through that moment.
How do you deal with that as like, because we all have to deal with it. We raised one type of way and now, like you just said, you come in here and kids are aware of their mental like capacity, like what's going on. Their parents are more involved as far as like we want to pull a kid. Because when I was in high school, it was like, if he acts up, you throw me to my mom, throw me to the, he acts up, you discipline him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, I'm like, oh, I'm feeling depressed today or anything. It wasn't, it just wasn't like that.
Right.
So how do you, like, how do you, this will help me, how do you transition out here to that?
I let the parents know what it is from the beginning. Say, hey, if you're going to work with me, I'm going to challenge your son. Understand I care for them, and I'm just as concerned to you as you are about their mental state, their emotional state. And so at any time you feel uncomfortable, come and let me know. Just let's have a real conversation about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to challenge your son to get past whatever he's dealing with, and he's in a safe space. He's going to know I care first. I don't cut that on until session six or seven. First five, six sessions, I'm super supportive. I'm showing you I want you to get better. And by that fifth or sixth session, you can see yourself getting better. So you have this trust that, oh, he is making me better. Hey, now I'm gonna start holding you a little more accountable. We've been working on this for a while, and I'll let you know. And so I start to build it. And then I let the parents know, say, hey, today's gonna be really challenging mentally. I'm gonna put him through some drills he's never done, make sure he's really tired and he's gonna miss shots. I wanna see how he responds when things aren't going his way. I got him though. And I communicate clear so the parents know what I'm trying to do. I built a communication guide of how you're supposed to communicate to your kids when someone you're trusting someone else to manage them. Like, if you trust that coach, let him coach him when it comes to basketball.
Facts.
Not you. Facts. You teach them how, you keep focused on their character, their discipline, their faith, you know, those beliefs. That's you. That's the home, right? I can be an extension of that as well. But when it comes to this basketball, if you trust in me, I don't go to your job telling you what to do. I literally have asked parents that, Nate, I don't care if they get offended. What do you do for a living? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're a real estate agent? Hey, man, I don't sell houses. I say, just like, yo, I don't sell houses, and I'm not trying to show you how to sell houses. So don't coach while I'm coaching, please. I need him to respect
that.
Me.
That's the sign of a good
coach. Some people get pissed off and never work with me again. Some people are like, hey, you didn't have to say it like that, but I understand. Right. Yeah, that's all I needed. I apologize for being rude, but I had to because you sitting here trying to coach your kid for me.
Real spill.
So communication is so key. Mm-hmm. Every conflict, obstacle, anything I've been through in my life, I've been able to communicate my way through. If it was me getting in trouble at home and try to talk myself out of whooping from my mama, I talk my way out of it. Right. If it was a grade for a teacher, if it was in college, man, thank God. Thank God for this gift, because I don't think I would have graduated college without it. Like, right. I had real conversations with my professors, like, man, I can't write this paper. Mm-hmm. I can't. Like, this is as far as I'm going to go. I got to be still. Cool. Like, that communication is so
damn,
key.
I wish
it's
I
so
had cool. that shit.
You can develop it. It's been developed over time. I was a quiet kid, very quiet. My brother used to talk for me. Mm-hmm. I barely talked. My mom thought I was slow, mentally slow. Like, yeah. She tells me all the time.
Right.
So, like, son, you didn't know your ABCs when you went to kindergarten. I was concerned. Mm-hmm. My brother was a genius. And so I was the total opposite. And once I got to kindergarten, I almost skipped kindergarten. They put me in a first grade class, and I almost skipped third grade because it just happened. And then I was still quiet. And then this communication was developed. I got thrown in the fire in a sales job where I quit my real job to go do this sales job. And I didn't know it at the time. I was doing a dead end sales job. I was actually selling to the same leads over and over every month because they couldn't generate leads. So I was trying to sell a product that somebody already said no to. And so I built a big callus for no and learned how to navigate conversations. And it helped me with my communication and that sales piece. And then growing up around a lot of people, I just learned how to talk to anybody from, you know, literally people who came in my house who were homeless and my mom took care of them to, you know, my mom did people's hair, like people who were entertainers and stuff. So I learned how to talk to everybody. And so it's developed through communicating.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's dope. That's big.
Yeah, that's man. Big. So not to go off there. Great question, man. Listen, man, that was for the end of the show. But that's awesome, man. So you're throwing in the fire. You're in the dog world of East Coast basketball.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is it like? You know, you're coaching on the West Coast now, West Coast basketball. You playing on the East Coast, what was the big difference that you see?
I say the big difference is, like, it's a little bit more like a dog. Like, I don't want to say Cali soft, because you can't put the whole Cali in. There's a lot of players out here that are dogs. But, like, now, like, when you meet a guy out here that's a dog, it's like, oh, you. It's a clear, like, you see, like, oh, he's different. But back home, it's like, we sprained an ankle, dog. Like, we not out 2 months. Like, you hurt your finger. Like we like, it's just like someone has to tell us to sit out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't, like, it's just different. Now, I'm not saying it's smarter. I'm just saying it's different.
No, there's a toughness factor too.
Yeah, it's a toughness factor. It's like, oh, I got a headache today. I'm not working out.
Yeah, man.
I've literally had kids tell me that. Like, yeah. Yo, I'm not going to lie. Like, my head's hurting. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Or like, like it's just different. Like, it's just different. I don't have a ride. The park is down the street. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just different. Where us is like, you had to tell them, no. No, bro, you're not working out today.
Yeah, we got to rein it back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's just the difference. But I do think it's more skilled out here. I think there's a lot better players, but I just don't think that.
Is there a way to develop that dog? Have you been able to take a kid who is acting in their privilege, is what I'm going to call it, and not tough? And being able to develop
for sure.
That in them? Okay.
I think it's not easy, but if you get them at the right age, it's for sure a way to, like, you know, let me put you on game about this, bro. Let me just tell you what you really doing or what you really showing. Because, I mean, availability is a big thing with college and NBA, you know, especially with, it's just getting a little softer in general.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it's a good conversation to have with the young is like, okay, you got pushed, bro. Like, that doesn't mean fight them. Like,
right.
Get back up, play tough. Like, just be tough. So, it definitely could change, but it's hard with some of these parents. I ain't gonna lie.
Always remind parents of what they did to get where they're at. You're dealing with parents who have a level of success.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'll always try to remind parents, like, how did you get to where you were at? Oh, I had to work hard. I came from nothing. Like, you see, that's what made you successful, is that you had to dig yourself out of a hole. And so all you had to do was fight. Put your kid in that situation. They're protected because you can always save them. You have the resources to save them. But let them fight for something, especially something they say they love. You can't buy your way through basketball, man. Your resources are not enough to get your kid to the highest level of basketball. If that were the case, there'd be a bunch of billionaire kids in the NBA.
Exactly.
And that's not the case.
Exactly.
No, it's the ones who worked. Now, if you have the resources, it does help.
And you work, exactly.
If you let them develop the mindset and emotional fortitude to become a real basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I always remind parents, hey, where did you come from?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let him go through that with me. This is protected.
Mm-hmm.
You pay me to train your kid.
Mm-hmm.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care about basketball. I want them to be tough in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. No, that's that was always a thing. All right, so you moved to Jersey, you said.
Yeah, in my senior year.
What made you move out of nowhere to Jersey?
Well, my mom, she got a better job, and she moved, and I had to go with her. So.
Yeah. No, same thing happened to me, man. So yeah, right. End of my junior year, moved to Kansas.
So you know how difficult it is to just up and leave your friends and everything you got going on. So
were you being recruited before you left?
I had a couple people just looking at me. It wasn't like I had official scholarships, but I definitely had some coaches looking at me and staying in touch with me.
Got you. And how far is Connecticut from Jersey? Is it?
It's like a 3-hour drive.
Okay, so it's not crazy far anyway, just as far as regionally, but you had to change schools, change friends, change everything.
Yeah, exactly. So.
And what school did you end up going to for your senior
year? I went to a prep school. It was called Berkshire Prep.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that?
It was
a
boarding school, too, so.
Oh.
So I was living there.
But yeah. What's that experience like going to a prep school on the East Coast?
It was good because it got me ready for college, like the academic wise. Like, I went to a public school and it was, it was treacherous. Like, it's not like these public schools out here that are still like kind of like preppy.
Yeah.
It was like one of those, we had like security going in. We had, you know, metal detectors.
Gotcha.
We had, you know, and kids dropping out all the time. School doesn't even know the kids dropped out.
Dang.
Yeah, it was bad. So, only thing good about it was the basketball team.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, but when I went to Berkshire, it actually helped me, like, how to study, how to write an essay, MLA format, like, other stuff like that.
And this is your senior year?
This is my senior year.
Wow.
It's my senior year. And I got they gave me a tutor, like, a personal tutor, and, like, he helped me so much. So, like, when I came there, I was in like algebra one, I guess, by the time I left. And I did 2 years, so they held me back a year. So
gotcha.
I did two
okay.
years. But by the time I left, I was like pre-calculus, I really took advantage of the academic part. It was hard not to.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like in Connecticut, you grew up in kind of a tough neighborhood where it was a little...
Yeah.
The hood of your place?
It's okay, like Hartford, Connecticut. It's like the city. So
gotcha.
Like, it's bad out there.
What types of obstacles were you facing outside of basketball, and how did you stay focused on basketball growing up in that kind of environment?
Yeah. My uncle helped me because I got to see, like you asked me if I travel, I got to see other places. Like a lot where guys run from, they don't leave the city. So they don't really know outside. They don't really get the experiences. But I got to see, like, okay, in the summer, I got to visit my uncle in Houston, or I got to visit my other uncle in L.A., or stuff like that. So I got to see outside, and I knew that there was more. So that just helped me, like, stay on the path a little bit more.
Gotcha.
Not to say I ain't wind off a little bit, but, you know, it helped me stay closer to the path I was trying to go.
Yeah, usually mentors or people around you, your coaches or whoever it is, kind of help you stay focused. Who were those people for you just growing up? You know, when your uncle's playing in the NBA during that part of, you know, when they're not around, you know, your mother, what are the other people who kept you?
I got to say, like, my dad, we didn't live together at the time, but my dad, he was smart, like, and he was around. He wasn't, like, just somewhere else. He was around. I also have to say, probably Coach Ken Smith that I met in ninth grade. He was actually a correctional officer.
Oh.
So he's one of those guys, like, he's used to those type of kids, and he knows how to, like, keep you and under that structure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He keeps you, and he knows, he's like, he's in tune with what's going on. So I definitely have to say him.
Yeah. Do you use that same discipline structure in how you train and coach now, like the stuff you grew up with, and you try to implement it into your coaching now?
I use some of it. You can't use all of it.
It might be illegal now, huh?
Yeah, that's definitely illegal now. You can't use all of it, but I use some of it. I definitely, like, use some of the intensity, but anything is about evolving, so you just got to learn how to, like, still communicate with this kid in a different demographic at a different age and stuff like that.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
So moving on to Jersey, your last 2 years of high school, your game, along with your academics, took a step up, I'm sure, right? So what was different about that environment from the environment that you came from as far as basketball goes?
I think the coaching wasn't as good, but I got to get in the gym a lot. I stayed on campus, so I got to get in the gym a lot. Our team wasn't as good, and I had a bigger role. Mm. So that helped me, like, learn how to do other stuff besides just try to score, like, and defend. Like, I learned how to do a lot, like, get other people going or take my time and let the game come to me, stuff like that, where I couldn't do that, where I had to play a role at Windsor.
Gotcha.
So it helped me. It helped me. But I would like to say it helped me academically a lot more because I was behind.
Gotcha. No, that's dope. That's dope. And then you had an opportunity to play college ball. So just talk about your recruiting experience and you know, what landed you at where you went out of high school?
So when I was at Windsor, I told you about the academic, it was bad. So my overall GPA was low. So I had a couple Division I's, like Central Connecticut, they wanted me, that's Division I. I had a couple other schools really following me, but the coaches would always be like, he doesn't have the grades.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing better at this prep school, but he doesn't have the grades. So I had to go to Division II. Coach Patterson was recruiting me since I was like in eighth grade.
Wow.
He would go to a lot of the camps I'd be at. So, and he knew my situation. I went to Kentucky State. It was dope. It's HBCU.
Yeah.
Anybody that doesn't think HBCU is a good place to go, I would think different. It's very good culturally. I still got the academics as well. But my freshman year, he got fired. I started as a freshman.
Oh, wow.
And he got fired. And I talk about coaches being different. He got fired because he hit a player.
Oh.
Yeah, but I don't think okay. Like, you got to put Coach P out there like that. He didn't really hit a player.
Okay.
But today, it's hitting a player.
What happened? I mean, I'm sure it's in some newspaper somewhere. Like, was it like a... He didn't, like, punch a player. It wasn't a...
No, he didn't punch a player.
And he motivated him physically.
Yeah. Okay. And Yeah, unfortunately, it was a Cali kid he did it to, too.
Oh, yeah, we can't do that. It's a rap, man. Cali kids, though, we don't do that.
Where B is like, all right, bro, like, I'm used to this, man. You got it. All right, I'm soft, dog. I need to start playing tough, right? So it was a difference in that, and then he got fired. And then assistant coach, I didn't really rock with, so.
Gotcha.
I then transferred over to Bluefield State, where I finished my college career. It was dope.
Okay, and Bluefield State's where?
In West Virginia.
West Virginia, it's a Division II as well.
Yeah, and the other assistant coach that left that I liked, he became the head coach there, and then he told me to come in. So
dope.
It was dope.
And it's, how was your journey as a college player, right? Mm-hmm. You know, people talk about being Division I, Division II. Man, what's your take on Division II basketball just from a competitive state?
Oh, it's competitive. People try to like downplay it. Like it's competitive. You can't just get a scholarship anywhere and then not be competitive. But Division II is definitely, I would say back then the biggest difference was the bigs. Like Division I bigs are around 6'11", 7 foot. You get a lot of those, where in Division II, they're about 6'7", 6'8", a little bit more agile,
yeah,
a little faster. They press. It's not like as clean as the Division I game is, but not to say it's not tough, because I played with some dudes.
Yeah.
Like you go to the open runs and stuff like that. These are dudes. Like these are not guys you would be like, how is he not Division I? There's guys down there that have the basketball down. There's a lot of guys, but they don't have the academics down, or they don't have the structure down, or they're coming down from a Division I. So it was tough. It wasn't easy.
Yeah, so what can we do as a basketball community to develop that, right? Like a school that doesn't care about the academics, and it impedes on a kid who's a student athlete not being able to go to the highest level possible for them. What could have been implemented for you to make a bigger difference when you were at the public school in Hartford?
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's, I don't know, it's like a culturally thing, or like a, nowadays, there's a school that I work at, every kid has good grades. So it's like, it's weird.
Yeah.
Like, it was the exact opposite, where every kid had bad grades. Like, kids failing off the team. So I think it's just a cultural thing. I don't know. I don't really have the answer to that. But I've seen it get a lot better.
Yeah.
Like, the main thing back when kids were getting recruited were from, how is his grades? How's his grades? How's his grades?
Yeah.
I don't hear that a lot now. I don't feel like.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, because you're at where you're at now.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't get bad grades.
Like, you at Harvard Westlake, you don't have bad grades, bro. So,
right.
And even when I was at Sierra, it was like, there's no kid, maybe one kid, like, struggling. He has a tutor. He has stuff like that. I didn't have a tutor. Public school, so stuff like that.
So, yeah, so kind of getting those resources for the student athletes, or maybe even the students in general, to have that focus on the grades and all that. The accountability all the way around. No, that's, I think it's important to talk about those experiences and bring light to what's not happening, right? Because we're spoiled in Southern California, man.
Facts.
We have resources and access to a bunch of stuff that kids in other places don't have, where there is some talent and opportunity that kids miss out on because of these little resources, and how we can give back, and how we can set other people up for that success. Like, I always want to talk about those things just to bring light to it. Like, if somebody has the ability to, or maybe it's us that we got to go and say, hey, man, we, you know, find an organization that does tutoring for inner city schools to make sure at least the student athletes, because that's what we're connected to, you know, have an opportunity to play and, you know, get to that next level. So,
like, Cali is the first place I heard somebody say, I got a 4.1 GPA. Like, how do you have, I've never heard of someone having above a 4.1. Like, what are you talking about? You got above a 4 and you play sports?
Yeah.
So.
No, it's definitely different out here.
Yeah,
and it's the competition. Like, back in the day, you could have bad grades and go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, like in the 90s, early 90s, late 90s. And now that's impossible because you have kids at the Harvard Westlake who are actually hoopers and they got the good GPA. That's your competition now.
Fact.
And so it leaves a lot of kids out there to, you know, fight through junior college ball, which is not bad, but it's still a process. Or go to a lower level and never get the opportunity to play against the competition they need to get an opportunity to go overseas or whatever it is. So.
Mm-hmm.
So you're Bluefield. Bluefield. And so Bluefield, you end up getting your degree from there, graduating. Yeah. So you went from having terrible grades, fixing it up, getting an opportunity to play basketball in college, and getting your degree. Yeah. And that's what it's about at the end of the day. What'd you get your degree in?
It's called Regents Bachelor of Arts. It's like a Bachelor of Arts degree.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So it's be a teacher or
it's like general studies.
Yep. Yeah. No, I did sociology. It was the easy way out.
Sociology, like psychology, stuff like that. Yeah.
No, it's a part of what we do for sure. I think, and you know, it's funny how it's bridged over to the game now. So after graduating, you have dreams of playing pro, or you know, how did you say goodbye to basketball?
Yeah, it was like it kind of my senior year, I got hurt a little bit, so it was kind of like, and I didn't enjoy it as much. Like I enjoyed the game before, I think my last school, but it was so much drama that my last year I got hurt. That like going overseas, like there was a couple combines I went to for like just to go overseas, talking to agents, stuff like that. But it would have been a rough road. Every road isn't like, I wasn't good enough to be in the top league in Europe. I just wasn't. And I was just teams from like Croatia or Serbia saying, you can come out here, you can earn, and then you can work for our industry, and it will make you get enough money to, so you'll not only play, you'll work, and then you'll get like $2,500 a month.
Work for play is crazy.
So
okay.
I'm like, no. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. And then they're like, if you play good, you could get move up to the A League or whatever it may be. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. And like I said, I'm still a hooper. I'm still could hoop. But I would hoop for the fun of the game, but I would also train some of the guys at the college that were still playing. So it's like, maybe that's my calling. And then when I went back to Jersey, I got to coach a AAU team, Rises One, under Kevin Houston, great program. And I fell in love with that. So I just knew like I had a calling in this area. I had a gift to communicate to kids because I've been through great programs and bad programs. And I've been able to compare the differences and to put my little spin on it. And I knew that was my calling, so that's how it kind of started.
Dope. And what age group did you start coaching at?
6th and 7th graders.
6th and 7th.
So it was like right at that age, like you could get them and still get them ready for the high school level, and it's not too late.
Yeah. Yeah. Dope. And then from your basketball journey there, give me the 2-minute drill of your journey to where you're coaching now, like where you coached and what age group.
Okay, so my Uncle Kenny saw I was training a lot, I was coaching a lot. He said, hey, my AAU team, we don't have a head coach out here in Cali. And I was like, and I seen it was aim high. They were decent. Mm-hmm. And he was like, why don't you just come out here and just coach for, like, come out here. This was like during Thanksgiving, just coach a couple practices. So I did that. The kids loved me. The parents loved me. I went back home. And I really thought about, like, Cali would be the place to be under my uncle, actually work for somebody that's family and that's a pro instead of just, you know, working for someone that I don't know, that's not family. So I moved out here and started coaching aim high. I wasn't coaching anywhere, and we did such a great job. We won a lot of local championships. I got the job at Oost Christian under Jordan Wild, great guy. And then the steps just moved from Oaks to Sierra to Harvard Westlake.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Man, so you got thrown right in.
Yeah,
okay.
I got thrown right in the fire.
Okay,
right
so you were the, this is the Malloy's team, like all growing
yeah,
up?
Yeah, this Dylan is Grant team. And, Dylan Grant, Dylan Northcutt.
Oh,
all your
man,
guys.
The boys, okay, yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Who else did you had a lot of guys that come through your court that were coaching under me right before. So I heard a lot about you. Like, y'all know Todd is great.
This makes sense. I didn't know you were the Joe they were talking about.
Yeah,
now it's all, now it all makes sense. Like, got it. Yeah. Okay, dope. Yeah.
Hopefully they had good things to say.
Oh, no. They said it was a dope. It was dope. I mean, obviously these kids are coming to the program ready, like for the work. Like those are the kids, like the two Dillons don't duck smoke.
No,
at all.
We
like
duck
you,
no smoke.
None. And so now it's dope to see. That's where they kind of get that little swag from too, the East Coast grind,
those are my
being West
guys.
Coast kids. So, No, those are, man, two of my favorites, man. Oh, yeah, yep.
Yeah, he came a little later, but.
Yep. Yeah, not Miles McBride. Was Miles McBride?
No.
No, okay, okay. No, but yeah, definitely. I wonder where True is. Anyways, we'll get back to that later. But, so, yeah, coaching. So, what was the biggest difference in you seeing coaching AAU on the East Coast to the West Coast? Was it the same thing?
No, it wasn't the same. I was dealing with NBA player sons. I also coached Deuce Hamilton. I coached Malloy, you know. So it was different for me, you know. A lot more resources. Mm. So it was better. It was a lot more resources. We always had gyms. We always, you know, traveled. We were traveling in middle school. Like, I'm talking about getting on planes.
Right.
Whereas when I was in Jersey, we were driving to local states, close states. But now we got to really worry about jet lag. We got to worry about, is the schedule too tough? So it was a great experience, and I think it helped me grow as a coach. Yeah.
What areas did you grow in? Like, what, you know, besides the resources, being able to see what it's like to. Mm-hmm. I think when you have resources, you're really able to see what you can maximize.
Like,
hey, you ain't got no excuses now. You have everything you need to be this person, right? Mm-hmm. What other areas, like, you know, just as far as being a coach, did you develop?
Time management. Like you said, we travel. We want to get a quick workout or practicing right after we get off the plane. So it's not like a lot of jet lag. And then when they should rest, and it just helped me. Like, if I want to be at a college coach, like, I got to learn, like, how to travel.
Yeah.
It's not like it wasn't easy for me because I didn't do it.
Yeah.
So it was cool, like, time management. And
what did the kids gain from having that opportunity at a young age?
They gained a lot. They got to play against all the best competition against the country. So they knew, like, locally we were great. Like, we were winning everything. We'd go down to the MAP. We'd go down to other places. We would win. And then when we go to national stages, it's like, yo, this kid is 13. This kid is 12. So they got to play against great talent. And it was they got a lot out of it. And they would go down. We would go down to Atlanta a lot. So the South, Atlanta has great basketball. The South in general, Florida, they have great athletes. So we got to play against all the smoke, and that's why they weren't ducking it when they came to me.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Nice, and they still don't duck it. Yeah. No, that's dope. Is the now shifting over from AAU to high school, right? What is the biggest difference? People ask all the time, like, AAU teams, high school teams, as a coach, what are the two biggest differences of coaching an AAU team versus doing it, I'm going to be specific, at a private high school in Southern California?
Okay, so I think the difference coaching, you have the kids 5 days a week. So you have the kids 5 days a week. They need to know every little detail about everything in your system, your defense, your offense, what we do in those screens, how are we playing pin downs, what tempo do we want. If you have that much time, that's you are implementing that. And AAU, a lot of these AAU teams are makeshift. They, 1 week he's playing with us, 1 week he's playing with another team, or 1 week we got a new kid, we don't practice the same amount. So it's not demanding as high school. It's like, really go out there and play and put like an all-star team together for most of the AAU teams. I'm not gonna say all of them. I think, you know, once you have a kids enough time, for me, with a high school, we pay attention to the small details and you better know them, and we could be more demanding on you for not knowing them.
Yeah.
Or in high school, like, we practiced once this week. How could I be mad at you because you didn't tag the roller, or, you know what I mean? Because we haven't worked on it enough.
So question. So what's the, because coaching is teaching, right? That is my number one rule. If you're a coach or a teacher, in what ways, so in high school, it's easy to see. You're teaching them IQ, you're teaching them reads, you're teaching them what the team philosophies are. Mm-hmm. What are you teaching them as an AAU coach where you might have players that you never practice with, or you know, a team that you're only practicing with twice a week? What are you teaching them?
All right, so this year, Jet Academy, EYBL, I had the 16s. We made Peach Jam. It was our first year being in the EYBL. We made Peach Jam, and we didn't have a kid in the top 20 in the country. So I did a good job. We did a good job with that. And there was teams with a lot of kids in the top 20 that didn't make Peach Jam. But we're going into the biggest tournament against teams that have been established for years, and we got 2 days of practice. And not only do we got 2 days of practice, our top two players are not going to be there. Our top two players just played in FIBA, and they're exhausted, and they're not going to be there, which is understandable, right? So my main thing, when I go there, we have to teach tempo because I don't have enough time to put in our schemes. So for me, this is how I felt. We have to teach the grit and grind and tempo. And the only thing I could really be accountable of you is how hard you play. So I think that makes me different from a lot of AAU coaches. But I'm like, we got 2 days to work. This is what we're going to do. We're going to get up full court. You're going to give me your all on defense or you're coming out. And then we'll teach slightly move. Like, we had two new players as well. So mind you, we went through a whole summer of sessions and I got two new players that are going to be expected to play a lot of time. So look, this is the movements you're going to learn. You're going to learn our plays, but we're going to drill in the pressure and the pace of the game. And so the first game, like, we had a playing game. So we win the first playing game by 30 as CP3's second team. Our first game in Peaches against the team who won it. We played Brad Bill, 16s, every coach in America, Coach Cowder, every coach, UConn, everyone's there. And I'm like, dad, I don't even have my two biggest weapons. But I'm going to be insane. I'm going to just make sure that everyone is playing as hard as you can, or you don't play. And we lost the game at the buzzer.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Gave yourself a
down
chance.
Down one. So. God gave ourselves a chance. Down right. one with the ball. Our best player at the time who was there slips. They still alley-oop for the game. Dunk. Yeah.
Damn.
And they ended up winning the whole thing. So.
Oh. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not mad about that, though, because they gave it their all and the proof showed. So.
Yeah. No, I like that. I was asking almost for myself, like, if I ever slide into the AAU scene, which I'm praying I never have to. But if I do, like, man, what do I coach? Like, I don't have time. Like, what do I coach? Because I want to teach you. I want to teach you this game and let you understand it. But that's some good advice, though. I like that, the tempo and just energy and effort, which makes sense. And I think if a lot of coaches in high school kind of turn down their scheme and system and turn into that a little bit, we'll see better results and you'll see a lot more kids having fun with this game. Because that's how we were coached. Like, we had structure and base in our motion and all that, but we got to hoop, man. Yeah. We got to have fun. Like, especially these kids are working on all these things and they don't get to apply it to the game. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know how to show them how to apply this to the game. Mm-hmm. I think the coaches have to get off their high horse a little and they have to meet these player developers in the middle. I'm not saying that every player developer is good, but I know a few who know what the heck they're doing.
Facts.
Where you can merge all these two worlds together, and it comes from coaching that piece of it. The flow, the tempo, is like you said, man, that's good stuff. So
appreciate
that insight. Yeah. And so moving up, I want to say it is kind of moving up the ranks in high school basketball. You know, Oaks Christian. Jordan Wild did an amazing job at Oaks Christian. Now he's over at Life, where is he at?
Yeah, he's at that Division II. Lutheran? No.
Sorry, Jordan. We know where you at.
My bad.
I just talked to him last week. I'm so mad.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get back to it. We'll look it up. But so Oaks Christian, then moving on to Sierra Canyon, where, bigger stage, national schedule. You were there when Bronny was there.
His senior year.
Yeah, so, the TV show, all of that. Moving to that level of basketball, how can one prepare for that environment?
You don't. You're not prepared. I wasn't prepared at all.
how did you navigate it?
You try to learn. You try to, you take it as, moving up in a level in basketball. If you're playing, you have to learn and adjust. So it was different, though.
Yeah. What were the biggest pros to being in that environment, and what were the biggest cons?
Yeah. I don't want to talk bad about a place I left. So some of the pros, I think, was being on that national schedule, like you said, being around some of the legendary coaches or legendary players, if you want to call them, or high major players that everyone knows. It was dope. Everyone gets to see you and know where you are, and you're working with a certain type of athlete.
Right, absolutely.
I always say this. If you can win as a coach, just to me, with no athletes, with bad talent, you get talent, you could win. That's just me. Like, if you get talent and you know how to manage kids, emotionally, and you used to winning with no talent, you can win with talent. So me being around the talent, like, I felt like I could actually help players get better still. Like,
yeah.
So that's how it was. It was good to, like, actually work with kids that, like, being recruited by every school.
All right, so I guess I can't ask you the con. I'm going to reword the question because it's more based around you, right, and being a coach. Like, what could you have done better as a coach during that time this year?
I could have done a lot better. I could have took more initiative on some of the little stuff. It was just culture shock. I could have done a lot better, though, on a couple of things. And also knowing the structure of things. You got to know who's who and what's what. That's very important with coaching. Like, it's not, you know, and your assistant, you have to assist. Mm-hmm. You can't go in there thinking you know everything. So,
yeah. Understanding your role. Just like you do with players on the court, right? They got to understand their role in order for the team to work. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for the head coach to always be very clear about my role as a coach, right?
I agree.
I know so much. Like, I'm on this journey too. And so let me know where I fit inside of your big scheme, your big dream, your big vision as a coach.
Or if I don't fit.
Right. Wherever it is. Like, hey, my big thing, I tell coaches this all the time. So my goal is always to help coaches get to that next level. So mm-hmm. I'm always plugging them with all these coaches I know into situations that are mm-hmm. great. And the first thing I tell them is, hey, be aggressive when you first go in there. Mm-hmm. Make the coach reel it back. Mm-hmm. Don't go in there and just try to be super duper humble and, hey, coach, where do you need me? I was like, it's not going to work because coaches are usually alphas. If you don't talk, they going to talk. And so I tell people, hey, go in there until the coach has to tell you to shut up.
Yeah.
Until he has to call you for a meeting and let you know that, hey,
you're doing too much.
Now you're going to get parameters. If they haven't given them to you before, they're going to give you parameters now because you overstepping your bounds. Mm-hmm. I'm always like that, man. If I walk into a job, I overstep my bounds. People used to ask me that on job interviews, like, you know, what's the negative thing about you? I'm like, man, I'm nosy, man. I'll be in everybody else's business because I want us to function at a high level. So I'll probably get myself into stuff I'm not supposed to be into, but it's only to help. Mm-hmm. So if you give me direction and you give me space to grow, I'll be out of your way.
That's some good insight.
Yeah, it's real stuff. So, then Sierra Canyon, so you were there for how many years?
Two years.
Then moving over to Harvard Westlake. So making that shift. And you've been there for one?
This is my first year.
This is your first championship year?
First year.
Oh, no, you just started.
Yeah, I just started. We're about to win the championship too, so. It makes sense.
Okay. So this is your first year over. You guys are in the same league as Sierra Canyon. Mm-hmm. Different program, different, I want to say different DNA, right? Where Sierra Canyon, you know, historically has these, you know, big names, the NBA kids, transfers coming in, all those kinds of things. Where Harvard Westlake has a different, more of a, I want to say, traditional where, you know, most of the kids come in, they're there for all 4 years and, you know, develop. They still get high level kids and NBA kids as well. But it's just different DNA in how they run their program. What was the biggest culture shock for you stepping into a Harvard Westlake environment?
So it was a big culture shock because I got kids on my EYBL team that are 4 and 5 stars that are trying to come to Cali, and they're like, yo, we need a school. What's up with Harvard Westlake? And I'm like, it would be a no-brainer at most schools to do whatever you can to get here, but they're like, no, bro. They need to be 8th, 9th grade. They need to have the good grades. We're not taking any junior transfers. We're not doing any of that stuff. So it's different, and they really stick by that.
Yeah.
And that the demand for, like, the academics is so tough. It's actually a great thing to be a part of. I feel good about it because it's like, wow, like, I can actually tell a kid, like, okay, well, if you come in here and you do the things you're supposed to do, you'll have an actual shot of playing.
Yeah.
Whereas in some other programs, you don't know. Because a kid could come through your program, he's done, you've got him better, you've developed him. And then at the snap of a finger, somebody else is here. So I like that better. And that was the biggest thing for me.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. They have standards, man. And you got to be upheld to that standard.
Yeah.
I heard, and I don't just hear this. I know Rabibo is a stickler for the details.
Mm-hmm.
And so what has your learning curve been, you know, since you've been there and understanding the details of the game?
Yeah, it's actually funny. I've been an assistant probably for, and a head coach in between, but probably for like 8 years now, 9 years. And I haven't learned as much as I've learned in that small space. I've only been there for about 3 months, 3.5. I haven't learned as much as from other coaches that I have around.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's a stickler. He knows all the terminology of the updated stuff. Like, it's a real, like, college environment. Like, so as a coach, you have to learn the terminology. You have to learn, like, the sets, the freelance, whatever we're doing. And it's been good because now I'm pushing myself. Whereas some of the other places, it's like, I know this.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, everything he's saying, I've said or understand or...
Yeah.
Where this is actually pushing me. So I love it. I love it.
And what are you looking forward to most this season? I mean, a championship, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Every coach's pinnacle. Just knowing the makeup of the team, the mm-hmm. makeup of the school legacy. What are you looking forward to the most being at Harvard Westlake?
I'm just looking forward to getting kids better. That's what I mean. That's what I love to do. And trying to take a team that maybe not as talented as last year to the same pinnacle. And the Mission League's tough this year, so
man,
I'm looking forward to these games.
Man.
I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be some good ones.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Throughout your whole coaching journey, there comes adversity. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest adversity that you've hit so far, and how did you overcome that?
The biggest adversity was being a chef in a kitchen with a lot of chefs. And how I overcome it is just by being me and being aggressive and trying my best to, you know, do what's right for the program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting, man. And how to be a chef, and I'm sure hopefully our audience is understanding what you're saying, just how do you morally, right? Like, I know me, like, if somebody's doing wrong, actually, I was in a practice the other day. Somewhere I'm helping coaching, and nobody even knows I'm helping there. And I'm probably, I don't want to say the place because it's just doing it. But I know what they're teaching is absolutely wrong.
Mm.
It burns my soul for them to have these kids do it.
Because you're passionate about it, and this is what you do, and you know it's wrong. Yeah.
What do you do? What do you do as a coach who... I just stepped into this place. I just stepped into this arena, but I know that's wrong.
Yeah.
What would you do in that situation? I'm gonna tell you what I did, but what did you do? No. I want to know what you would do.
It's just, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a tough situation because you're there in the situation. You're there to assist, right? You're there. Yeah. To make sure everyone sees that person's vision. So, I mean, what do? You stick by the person's vision. I don't know. You can't. I don't know what else you do.
Yeah. No, I mean, so what I did, I went to the coach and I said, hey, you know, when I learned this is what we did.
Right.
Do you think, I said it like this, this is what I learned. You ask questions, it allows people to feel like they came up with an answer. So I said, hey, this is how I learned to do this. Do you think the kids can understand it on that level? Now I got his brain working. Could the kids understand it like that? I don't know. Let's try it next time.
Mm.
So next practice, this happened last week. Practice this week. Hey, Coach Todd's going to take you through this drill. He literally just walked out, like he left.
Mm-hmm.
And just like stood back and watched me work. And he was like, oh, no, this is exactly what we need.
Facts.
And so use your questions and use them in a way of showing reverence and honor, but in a way of showing confidence. And I want the kids to get better. Like, hey, coach, have you ever thought of this?
Mm-hmm.
Are the kids able to perform it this way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, throw it back to a position of, hey, man, we're all here trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
And see how the coach responds. And they'll let you know sometimes if you need to be in that space. The coach responds like, nah, my way or the highway. Then bet, I need to bounce because I'm not going to grow from you if you're not allowing me to give input and ask questions. Like, any leader should allow you to ask questions. I tell my daughter all the time, like, you can't tell me what you want. Like I said, hey, go clean your room. But daddy, I want to, no. You can ask me a question. Daddy, is it okay if I finish watching this show? Yeah, you can finish, or maybe no, you can't today. That's what I'm on with my daughter. But if my daughter's never allowed to ask me questions and she's feeling like I'm telling her stuff all the time, she's eventually just going to start rebelling. And that's what's going to happen with your coaches. I've been in a space where I was the assistant and I'm like, don't do what the coach just says. Don't do that. You know what I mean? Because
that's a messed up position to be in.
It is, but it's it's like, but my job, my heart's for this kid. I cannot let this kid do that and ruin his opportunity or make a mistake on the court. I'm like, don't do that. He don't know what he's talking about. But it's like, man, that passion in me burns so much. And that's only when the coach doesn't listen. I'm going to bring it to you first. Hey, coach, you suck. You ain't teaching defense right. Like, you're not holding them accountable. I'm going to tell you straight up. And so if you take that and say, hey, how can we get better? Cool. But if you keep on doing the same thing, I have no other choice. I got to be true to who I am and who I'm developing. And so it's a rough space for sure.
I would also like to say, you know, the guys who know what they're doing, they know. Like you know someone that knows what they're doing. But everyone thinks they know what they're doing. So that's another thing. And when you're a head coach, and this is another thing that kind of prevents me from stepping in it. When you're a head coach, every assistant thinks they would do it a little bit different. Mostly. Yeah. Or everybody says, like, thinks their way will work. The proof is in the pudding. Right? So, and that's with me too as well. So, like, if I'm coming off a season where I didn't win, like, or I didn't get to where I was going, I think maybe it's time for me to be a little bit more open to listening to stuff. Because things change.
Right.
You might have one way of winning right now that does not going to work in 3 years.
Yeah.
So, me is like, I just try to stay as open as I can, because just like that, people catch on to your schemes, catch on to whatever it is. It's always about adjustments. So, that's all I was saying.
No, that's great to hear, like, from a leader too, is to let your assistants in on your vision. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like, hey,
exactly.
This is how I see it. Do you guys have any questions? This is how would you do this differently? And just have the discussion. If I just had the discussion, like, yo, man, I don't think this book should be standing up, I'm gonna put it down. But you were like, nah, man, it should really stand up. Like, man, I understand why you're doing that, but I'm gonna lay it down so people can see this poster fully. You're gonna feel hurt.
Yeah.
Because I gave you a reason, I gave you an explanation instead of saying, nah, this is the way we do it. I'm like, nah, dog, talk to me like a grown up. Let's have a conversation. Like, I'm not here to be your puppet. Like, grown man, you're supposed to be mentoring me. You're supposed to be trying to build a coaching tree. You know, like, having that conversation, once again, comes down to that communication. And so I think that's what the name of this episode is going to be called, is communicating correctly.
I like that.
Man, dope. And so I'm sure you're working your way through the ranks, man, to be a coach, a head coach one day and running your own program at some level. Is that your ambition? And you know, what steps are you taking, you know, besides being at a great school to learn? What other steps are you taking to?
So, like, you know, I have been looking at a lot of people in the footsteps that I want to be in. I've been talking to my uncle. I've been talking to other uncles. And I've been talking to a lot of coaches just about some of the small stuff I could be doing. I'm trying to go back to school, get a master's degree. I'm trying to do a lot. So, but it's a lot of learning that I'm doing right now, and I'm also trying to focus on what's going on right now as well, because I do care about winning and I do care about basketball. That's the number one thing I would do. And some people say, like, I would do this if I wasn't getting paid, but, like, I do it. I've done it without getting paid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not wouldn't do it. I've done it without getting paid.
Yeah.
So this is what really, you know, I'm into. So I'm just trying to take it a step at a time, and I got to keep talking to more people like you.
No, awesome, man. I'm here, man. The biggest change in your life happened a few months ago, man.
Yeah.
Got a little one in this world.
Yeah, little Josiah.
Little Josiah. How old now?
He's 4 months, almost 4. 5.
Oh, Those are the good times, my boy, right there. How has being a father impacted how you coach? Do you see a change already?
Yes. Before, you don't really realize because you don't have, I didn't have kids, I didn't realize, like, this is someone's son. So I am very intense, but now I understand, like, this is someone's son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, you have to do whatever it is to help them figure out, it's a community. You have to figure out what's best. You can't just give up on a kid, some of these kids, like, mm-hmm. or you can't just treat a kid any type of way. Not that I would, but it's given me a lot more like recognition on, okay, we don't know what's going on and why he's acting a certain way or not, but it's our job. It's also my job as someone that's another figure to help with that.
Yeah.
So I got kids that I train, like they're going at it with their parents. Maybe the parent wants them to be a little bit better than they are at that point, and it's causing friction between the relationship. It's very important that when that kid disappoints me as a coach, that I still treat him as if he were one of mine.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy. It was easier before to kind of like give up on some of these kids. Not give up, that's the wrong word, but like, oh, he don't want buy-in? All right, right. Cool. But it's giving me a little bit more of like a respect for like, okay, man, I wouldn't want somebody to do that to decide. Like, I couldn't imagine more grace.
Yeah.
Like, or I can understand why that parent was so mad. Like, you know, like there would be at the games. We all get this as coaches at the game. A parent is frustrated.
Yeah.
Right. And you want to be just as frustrated back to the parent. Like, who are you to come up to me and do you understand what I'm going through with the game? But it's giving me a more like knowledge of why and the emotions behind it. So I get it.
Yep. No, man, having a kid changed my life. And like, I called a bunch of parents back and said, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I understand now. I get it. Yeah. It's exactly what you said, man. No, man, it's dope, man. And good luck on your journey, man. We look forward to see you just thriving this year and moving forward, man, just in fatherhood and coaching and training and everything that you're doing, man. Just keep going, man. You have a great mindset. And you have the ultimate resource around you just being in Southern California. Like, grab onto that, man, and keep learning. So, man, thanks for sharing that journey. We're going to hop into the next segment, man. Well, it ain't over. Now the fun starts.
It sounded like he was wrapping it up.
Now the fun starts. Is my mic, I'm good? All right, so this is my Rushmore, your top four. All right, we switching it up, man. We was talking about all the movies. He said he's a movie buff when it comes to this basketball stuff. Yeah. He's seen Eddie. A lot of people ain't seen that with Whoopi. Man, I'm doing top four African-American films of all time.
Not just basketball.
Not just hoop. Top four African-American films. I've been waiting for this.
Ooh, that's tough. All right, so I'm like kind of a classic dude. My dad used to watch a lot of movies that I used to watch, and I used to love. So I gotta put Harlem Nights on there.
Oh yeah,
I gotta put Harlem Nights, and then second, I gotta put Coming to America.
Yeah,
I gotta put Coming. Those are classics. You can't not have those on the list of just black movies. The next two is tough though. Are we talking like black movies or are we talking like black movies?
I'm talking black movies.
Okay. All right, so I'm gonna put Last Dragon up there.
Ooh, Leroy.
Yeah, I gotta put Leroy up there. That's a movie. I can literally watch that back to back to back to back.
I'm trying to find, is it streaming somewhere? Do you know?
I think it's Tubi.
Last Dragon's on Tubi?
Tubi.
Easy work. Okay, easy work.
Yeah. All right. So and last I gotta put, this is tough, man. I gotta put Fire Heartbeats up there.
Really? Over the Temptations?
Yeah.
I
rock with the Fire Heartbeats more than the Temptations. Eddie K, man.
Nah, man, the David Ruffin?
That's classic.
I mean, they're the same person, but they're not. But
they are.
No, man, that's a solid five or solid four, man. That's solid. I like that. It's a throughout the whole black genres. It's a crazy the amount of movies that you missed though.
I know, that's why I'm like,
yeah, but we'll do your four.
But I'm okay with that four because it's like, if you replace one of them, it's like, you still gotta, come on, come to me. What's your four?
My four, okay. Mine are a little different, I'm not gonna front, because I have a my catalog is deep. My catalog is deep. All right. You know what my first one is, man? It's actually Dope. You haven't seen Dope?
No.
Netflix is pretty new. Oh my god.
Oh wait, I've seen Dope.
It's the sequel to The Wood.
Actually, I've seen Dope.
Okay, I was about to get you, because he thought he could get me on movies.
Hold on. When you said catalog, I'm thinking you going back to like the 70s for a movie.
No, not yet.
I've seen Dope. I've seen it on, I think it was on Netflix when it first came out.
It was on Netflix
when it first came out. I've seen the movie. It's about the kid in high school.
Yes.
And I think, I forget what happened, but I've seen it.
Yeah, getting involved into some drug dealing stuff he shouldn't. He's a very smart kid, but that movie hits on everything, man. It's a rom-com, coming-to-age, adventure, gangster film, all mixed
in one.
And
it's like Cali film.
It's Cali, yeah. So for me, man, I can watch, every time I get on an airplane, I watch that movie. Mm-hmm. That's my airplane movie. Okay. Just love, and it's hip-hop. Like, I love hip-hop. I'm a big fan of hip-hop. Mm-hmm. So Dope is on my four. It's the one that is probably on nobody else's but mine, but I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. Two, man, this is my movie. You remember Trippin'?
Trippin'. Why do I know this move?
Oh boy, I forget his name now. I don't even know his real name. Donald Faison's on it. He's his best friend. They're in high school and they, you know, whole, I'm just getting coming to age. Old girl from, she used to be on In the House with LL Cool J back in the day. She's the love interest. Man, but he's like a daydreaming. He like daydreams. He doesn't live in reality, so he has these random daydreams, man. That movie.
Well, see, now I know you watch movies because you name a movie that I don't know, and that's rare.
I told you.
That's rare.
They sleep on me. Okay.
But I don't know how credible your list is with Dope on it right now. All time.
I. This is my four. My Rushmore. And I gave the caveat that it's on nobody else's. So yeah, that This is where it gets tough.
That first two, it gets tough.
I'm going to go with Life.
Oh, I left Life off.
That's cool.
I gotta take something off.
No. See, I think you, because this is the thing, you put Coming to America and Harlem Nights. And not Life. I think they're all three are in the same category.
All Eddie.
They tried to make the funniest movie ever, all three of those movies. And so that's where I believe you could pick any of those and you could live with it. But Life.
Life is up there with me.
Man, them two together.
Gunline Boss.
They're talking about the Gunline Boss.
That's my movie right there.
Yeah, so Life, because to me it's the funniest, probably the funniest black movie of all time. Lastly, man, I think I gotta do my Hoop movie. Yeah, which is Sunset Park. Sunset Park is more nostalgic for me, man, and just the story, the lines in it. I love Sunset Park. But man, I'm leaving. We leaving our boys in the hood.
Fredo's my guy too. Shout out to Fredo Starr. He's my guy. Dope. He did a great job in that movie.
Yeah, no, he's man. So many movies out there, like just the class. Don't Be a Menace to South Central, like Menace to Society, shoot, Soul Food, man. There's so many good movies. Just so you see how these movies are. My man cave. One day it's gonna be every black movie poster, just lined up everywhere. And I actually want to put them in the floor so you can be walking on greatness. That's the idea, but.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Karina. What? I need your top four black movies.
Poetic Justice.
That's a good
one. Karina's Mexican, guys, so her list is going to be a little off. It's okay. Go ahead.
This is literally from me growing up.
You know Poetic Justice is dope.
Yeah, that's good.
Because
Tupac. But,
Well, this next one might, Friday After Next. I think Friday After Next.
Did you watch Friday and Next Friday?
Yeah.
And you think that's better than both of those two?
I love Cat Williams. That's my favorite movie of all time.
There you go.
Okay. So because of his role in that movie, it's just like...
Respect. Respect.
It's my Christmas movie.
I respect it.
That's your Christmas movie?
That's my Christmas movie.
Next two.
I'm trying to think of movies actually Coach Carter was a huge one when I was growing up. I memorized Our Biggest Fear is Not That We're Dead, but Our Biggest Fear is That We're Powerful.
Timo Cruz. People say I look like him.
Crazy.
Timo might be top 10 in movie basketball players.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
He had a burner.
He did.
Yeah.
I don't know the fourth one. I know it. Does it count if it's a docu?
What is it?
Yeah.
It could. One based on A Tribe Called Quest. The one that one comedian.
No, it doesn't count. All right, you got to do a real movie. Just Right?
That's my favorite basketball movie. I wouldn't say it's a great, like, overall film.
Just Right, that's what Quinn would do.
Creed.
Oh.
Oh, there you go.
Is that a black film?
I think that the
are you right?
Director okay, is black.
I was just making sure. I had a question. We can go on. No, it was. I was you good. No, absolutely. Good for it. Now it's time for Fix the Net. So misconception about Joe Dawkins that you want to make straight in the world. So let us know what it is and what the truth is, and then get your bucket. Fix that net.
That I didn't play basketball, and I did. I don't have
people.
Don't,
people think that you didn't play.
I don't. They don't know me out here because I'm not from Cali. See, like if I went back home, they'd be like, they'll know. So it was like, you kind of like Cali is like a prove me type state. So
no, 100%.
I did. And I'll post some highlights too. Check it out.
And one, love it. Joe Dawkins played basketball.
Yeah.
Google, it's actually on his Instagram
page. And I'll
page.
Still cook you, too. Come out, I'll still cook you.
That's crazy. We play adult league on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I would love for
what
you to
time?
Come on the hoop. It's at night. Well, not right now. After the season in the spring, we'll get you for next season.
So my son will be a little bit older, too. So I can stay away.
And roll him out. Bring him in a stroller. It's cool. Yeah. We all bring our kids, so it's all good.
Say no more.
Yep. And this is the part of the show we flip the script. So two questions for me. It could be about anything in the world.
All right. Since you're a movie buff, if you got to direct a movie, what would the movie be about? And who would you cast?
All right, so let's get into this. My movie would be, there's a movie called Wild Style. It was the first hip hop film ever, right? It's literally like a documentary on hip hop, but it's in movie form where they are introducing hip hop to the world. So it'd be a mixture of Wild Style and Forrest Gump. They made the Get Up, the short series they made on Netflix called The Get Up. It was a limited series. It's that concept where I would take a person and they would be the personification of hip hop. Like they were born on Sedgwick and Cedar, and then how hip hop developed over the years, their life's journey would take us through hip hop. And so hip hop being in the block parties, and then it's going commercialized, and then it gets into the 90s and, statement rap, you know, you're talking about N.W.A. and all those types of things. And it goes into, you know, our generation of hip hop, the Jay-Z's and all that, and to where hip hop is today. And their life's journey would take us through what hip hop is. But it'll be like Forrest Gump, like he was just in random places around the most monumental events in the world. Mm-hmm. And so he would be around those things. So, hey, don't steal my idea. I don't even know why I put this on camera. I've had this thing locked up for like 20 years.
I was about to say, you really have a movie script.
Oh, no, this is the movie. Like, this is my, like, I want to make that movie because I love hip hop. And I love Forrest Gump, man. Forrest Gump's actually my all-time favorite movie, period. I just love Forrest Gump. And his journey. So, that's a great question.
All right. So, since you love hip hop, I'll just go off of that. Top five artists.
Top five hip hop artists all time?
All time.
DJ Quick. I'm gonna actually probably do it in order. DJ Quick is number one for me. Just grew up on him. Mm-hmm. West Coast dude. Introduced at an early age and just love the sound. Love just one of those nostalgic things. Like, I listen to it now, I'm like, man, what the heck was I listening to when I was 13? But it is what it is. It's just DJ Quick. I like the old Kanye. I like Kanye in general, but man, I just listening to College Dropout and Graduation and even later on, My Dark Twisted Fantasy, like all those, man, Kanye was
classics.
Dope, bro.
Straight classic.
Yeah, he turned a little crazy on some of these things and started singing about stuff I didn't want to hear about. And, but ultimately, I got to give it to Ye. I have to. J. Cole, for sure. Mm-hmm. I just, from Who Dat to, you know, to his most recent stuff, man, I could just listen to Cole all day and mm-hmm. just like his flow, his rhythm, his bars, and his, you know, just style, man. So
Cole's tough.
And here's a sleeper, is Andy Mineo, man. He's a Christian rapper, but
I gotta research him.
Andy, I'm gonna send you some tough. Andy, man. It's because just being on my, you know, my journey of faith, man, whenever his album dropped, it felt like I was going through the same thing he was going through. And so it just spoke to me. And he got bars, like, he could flow. Mm-hmm. And it's not, he moved away from corny. He was corny when I first started listening. I'm like, it's corny, but it's, you know, it's cool.
Right,
and then
right,
he moved away from corny and really, like he's not a Christian rapper. He's just a rapper who is a Christian. And so, like, it's his stuff. He's about to drop again. He gave us a teaser. He disappeared for 2 years. Mm. And so now he's finally coming back out. So hurry up, Andy. Hurry up. He actually liked our Instagram post the other day. So thanks, Andy. That's four, huh?
Yep. One more.
Woo! I'm trying to think of, if I had to go and turn somebody on in the car, who would I listen to? People are going to not like me for it. But it's probably Big Sean, man.
Big Sean, that's a sleeper.
I don't understand why he's not talked about as one of the greatest. He has bars. He has, like, he's fun with his rap, but he talks about some.
He talks about some real stuff.
From all of them, man. Detroit 2 is fire. Like, people slept on that. His newest album just came out. He's on the same stuff. Man, I'm a big fan of Big Sean. So
I like your list.
I've left a lot of people out. It's crazy, but at my old age, that's who I am.
I ain't mad at it, though. It's a good list.
Karina, anything? Any questions, comments, concerns for the day? Awesome. All right, man, you got a 24-second shot clock. Let the people know where they can find you and any message that you have for them. That's your camera there.
Find me at Joe Smo Training on Instagram, Facebook, William Joseph Dawkins. You can find me on Harvard Westlake, come to a game, pop out, Mission League, or Jet Academy Games, Nike EYBL. Every session, I'll be there.
Awesome, man.
Yes, sir.
Man, appreciate you coming through. Yes, sir, man.
I appreciate you, dog.
Yep, absolutely. Sure. That's all we have for you today, folks. We'll see you next time. Peace.